You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
And good morning. Welcome to this week's edition of the Yarra Bicycle Users Group Radio Show on 3CR. Radical radio, community radio. So many ways to listen to 3CR, digital, online, and streaming, and podcast, and a whole bunch of stuff. And the community online app. I just can't get the words in the right way. But anyway, thank you to Democracy Now! For the last hour of current affairs. We're proud to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which we transmit people-powered radio. And Yarra Bicycle Users Group Radio, we're a show about bikes, cycling, urban transit. No, that's complete wrong words. Micromobility, all those sort of things to do with non-combustion engines and increasingly things like e-bikes and cargo bikes. And we also do adventures. I should kind of touch on a bit more adventures, because this show, we're leaning into advocacy yet again, and we're going really, really meta, if I could say that, with... It's almost like a catch-up version of another show that I did in February with the same guest, with catching up with topics from that show. And that is being talking to Alex from A Nicer Wellington Street and Aidan from Safer Streets for Richmond. Sorry, it's the eternal conundrum I get into on a Monday morning of one coffee is powering my brain. And again, the song you're listening to is Malvern Star by Scratching. Okay, well, what I might do, see if I can reorganise myself with some news and events when I come back, but we'll get straight into the interview with Alex talking about what actually happened last Tuesday, the 12th of May, down at Richmond Town Hall. Well, a whole bunch of things which are not settled, really. It's a continuing issue, and it will have many, many more chapters to it. So, yep, we're going to be talking about Wellington Street. Today on Yarra Bicycle Users Group Radio on 3CR Community Radio, I'm having a catch-up chat with Alex Lamb. And the apparent decision that happened on the 12th of May at City of Yarra meeting at Richmond Town Hall. Alex, how do we come at this? It was very odd in terms of we had option one and option two, and then this option three turned up that no one had actually got to actually discuss from the public.
There was a marathon meeting at a council meeting at Richmond Town Hall on Tuesday night, last Tuesday night, 100 people had registered to speak from the public. It was huge. Now, not everyone showed up, but it was still about 3 hours on the agenda to discuss the Wellington Street project. We counted how many people spoke in favour and how many people spoke against, and there were slightly more people speaking in favour on that night. We've been managing a large community group and community campaign in support of upgrading Wellington Street. And there has also been a loud group of people in the community against it. They had a petition, we had a petition, they had signs, we had signs, and we were very involved in talking to council about that project. Unfortunately, the majority of the Yarra City councillors voted against the project. Only two councillors voted on our side, and they were the two Greens councillors, Sophie Wade and Edward Crossland. Now, we are very disappointed in the result, of course. Unfortunately, we feel the council ignored what the majority wanted. And so there was a community consultation process, the Your Say Yarra process, in which two-thirds of the respondents voted in favour of upgrading Wellington Street, in favour of modal filters to stop through traffic from coming through the neighbourhood on Wellington Street. There was also extensive and expensive consultation, traffic management reports, community consultation and engagement reports. And we are looking at what the cost of those reports are, but extensive and lengthy detailed reports showing the benefits to the community and showing that, you know, the claims of the No campaign, which were that thousands of cars would run on side streets or that all cars would be blocked from Wellington Street, were completely misguided, completely. We also got clarification from councillors before the meeting. Those claims were completely misguided. Our concern is also that this No campaign used a lot of misinformation. You know, they had on all their signs, they said they had this rat running claim. On the petition, they claimed that the street would be blocked entirely to traffic, and it was just wrong. That was never taken into account by the councillors who voted against the project, and I think that's unfortunate. So here we are. We feel that there's been this big consultation process, this huge research project, which has just been ignored. The evidence has been ignored and the community has been ignored. There was a very loud campaign in support of the project. We also heard that two-thirds of the emails that councillors received were in support of the project. And again, the majority of the statements on at the Tuesday night meeting were in support of the project. But the councillors who voted against the project only quoted those who were against it. It's very disappointing. We've had lots of emails since the decision from the community saying they're very disappointed in the result. They feel very disillusioned. They feel, what was the point of the consultation if they're just going to vote against the community anyway? There is the bigger picture to this. On the weekend, I also popped into a community event about the proposed car parks on Alexander Parade. And so 3/4 of the community are against building car parks on the green nature strip, very wide green nature strip on Alexander Parade. This is outside the gasworks site. 3/4 were against it in the community survey, but the council's still going for it. 2/3 of people were for upgrading Wellington Street, and yet the council voted against it. There was also, we saw recently, the big old elm trees in Edinburgh Gardens were cut down despite large community opposition, and yet the council still went ahead and cut down those trees. And so we're also seeing this, you know, a series of steps in which green spaces are being degraded or proposed green spaces, because Wellington Street was also proposed to have a lot more tree plantings, a lot more greenery. And that was one of the reasons we were very supportive of upgrading Wellington Street, to provide that shade and that tree canopy that Collingwood really needs. And that was voted against. And there's this pattern of behaviour from the councillors to vote against the community, to ignore the consultation and research processes, and to incrementally degrade the green spaces.
3CR celebrating 50 years.
Throughout the month of June, we're asking you to support fierce, independent and community-controlled media by making a donation to our Radiothon.
We'll be taking donations online, over the phone and in the station to help keep 3CR going for another year.
The 3CR Radiothon kicks off in June. To donate, go to 3cr.org.au, call the station on 03 9419 8377,
or drop in at 21 Smith Street, Fitzroy, during business hours.
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
We've had adjacent issues to do with active transport, walking and cycling. And on this show over the last little while, since we've had this relatively new council since 2024, and including things like Charlotte Street, Pocket Park, that got voted down despite the greater community wanting it, and also the Elizabeth Street issue, which will not go away because it doesn't fit Australian standards and it will eventually be changed. It has an exhaustive history going back to the 1990s and it will be revisited. I find some of the stuff that this current council are doing is short-term, grievance-based, for want of a better expression, and just really has no long-term benefit.
And I find it's lacking in vision as well.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we've now got the opportunity to spend a substantial amount of state government funding on active travel upgrades. And so the council could access this money, but they're not. And instead, I mean, I don't know what is on the table right now for improving active travel. As you said, the Elizabeth Street bicycle lane has been downgraded, and now the Wellington Street, that's a major strategic cycling corridor. There's about 2,000 cyclists a day that ride down Wellington Street, and more as the population grows. And it's not safe. It's safe for a confident cycler, but it's not safe for those who are not confident. And I'll encourage people to take what is a free and healthy and green form of transport. I also think, you know, right now there's a fuel crisis. The federal government is stepping in with fuel subsidies. The state government is stepping in with free public transport. It's up to local councils to also step in and make it easier for people to access the only truly free transport that there is, which is active travel. And it's their job to really invest in active travel. They need to do their job. People want it. And people, you know, the biggest obstacle to people accessing it and riding bikes or scooters or whatever is safety. And we deserve to feel safe choosing this free and accessible form of transport.
Just reference back to what you just discussed prior, you're talking about money available. We're talking about the congestion levy, and that city of Melbourne, Port Phillip and Yarra are in the Category 1 levy area. So there's about $3 million available there, which could have funded this. Mm. And now there's another issue that's looming, is that we've got Northeast Link is going to be opening within 2 years if it's on schedule. Those streets around Collingwood, Clifton Hill, are right the firing line there, and you need traffic calming. And I'm saying this from someone who I was previously involved with a couple of campaigns against the East-West Link and things to do with Bendigo Street and a whole bunch of land issues and possibly land banking issues around the area. I think this council is sleepwalking to a few problems, and they should be doing the best they can to either alleviate or protect their residents, and they don't seem to be doing that.
The North East Link is a very good point that you raise, because it does have the potential to dump a lot of traffic into North Collingwood. So one of the things that we also hope to continue to push for as part of this campaign are it's a small concession, but at least it will help to restrict turns during peak hour into Wellington Street from Alexandra Parade and Queen's Parade. So if we do manage to get those turn restrictions through, and that will require more community consultation, which I hope they listen to for once, if we can get traffic on those highways restricted during peak hour from turning into Wellington Street, that will make a difference. And I'm glad that at least because of the sustained and positive pressure that we've been pushing through this campaign, we can still get some improvements. It's not everything we wanted, but we have some improvements. And so, yes, we will get some more pedestrian crossings. We will get some more lighting up in the Clifton Hill section of the street. We will have the speed limit lowered to 30 kilometres an hour. It's such small change compared to the bold vision that we were hoping for, but at least we're getting some small improvements that would not have existed otherwise.
I can't understand how some of the No campaign simply just couldn't walk a few blocks over to Carlton or North Carlton and have a look at Drummond or Canning Street and just see, because they used to be quite busy streets.
It's a point that we repeatedly made. This is not so radical. It already exists only a couple of blocks away on Napier Street and Canning Street. But Unfortunately, those arguments fell on deaf ears when it came to decision time. And these are points that we made repeatedly for months, and the community did, because, as I said, twice as many people as the No campaign wrote emails in support to councillors, you know, supporting this change, which is also huge for such a bold proposal.
Rally to Save Public Housing. Over 10,000 residents are set to be displaced, with 6,660 homes to be demolished across 44 public housing towers. All this in an ever-worsening housing crisis. Join us at the State Library of Victoria on Saturday the 30th of May at 11 a.m, and then march to the Atherton Gardens public towers in Fitzroy as we fight to save the towers, people's homes and the communities in and around them. After the rally will be a community festival at the towers. The Victorian Labor Government is determined to demolish and privatise public housing and sell off public land to developers. See you on Saturday 30th of May. Together we can stop this madness. Save Public Housing Collective is a 3CR supporter.
NYSA Wellington Street website, there is a very, very detailed thing of the decision and the outcome. So if people want to read more on what actually occurred. And I do want to kind of reframe what I just said in the intro. This option three, instead of the option one and two that the public were commenting upon, this option three is something that none of us from the public got to have any feedback on. I find this quite irregular, the way that purport to represent your interested ratepayers and residents by acting in such a way.
And I think, you know, the other good outcome of this campaign is that I think a lot more people are leaning into the council process. I think previously a lot of local council deliberations and decisions just kind of happened in the background, and they were only followed by, you know, a handful of people that were very interested in what council was doing. Of course, there's not very much reported in the news about it. It can be hard to know what's actually going on in council unless you're, you know, going to council meetings or reading particular blogs. And I think now a lot more people are interested in what councillors are doing, what those decisions are. A lot of people have been actively engaging with council decisions and council processes for the first time. There's a huge amount of energy in this broader group that have, you know, that I've met through this amazing neighborhood campaign. So I've actually loved being part of this campaign because I've met so many of my neighbors across this neighborhood in Collingwood and Clifton Hill. It's been wonderful to meet so many people, and they're all fantastic, and they're all super energetic, and they're not done. You know, they're keen to keep going. There's just as much energy and chatter and ideas in our WhatsApp group as there was before. We're not dying down. We're not going away. The council elections are 2 years away. There's a lot of people who are very engaged and will keep watching council and will keep leaning into consultation processes and opportunities for change, and very much have their eye on the next council election.
You're providing a really vital role here, because I'm just thinking from a long-term perspective of, we used to have local papers, and I know this sounds very archaic, but you used to have the Melbourne Times and a whole bunch of local newspapers. Now it's very hard, as you've just said, actually find out what's going on unless you look at the council website and they've got something there which is written from their perspective and a couple of blogs. So what you're doing is actually revitalising that process where your neighbours talk to each other about what is happening in their streets. And
yeah, that's
this,
right.
This predates a lot of things to do with, you know, the change in our media ownership, but it's absolutely vital because Yarra, I think... the average age in Yarra is what? No, 32 to 34. And I find this really amazing in the way that this recent councillor group are behaving towards, well, not towards those group of people, it's towards older householders and people who are doing, you know, are fine compared to what's happening with the broader community of, you know, rental crisis, livability, all this sort of stuff. It's really quite perplexing to observe from a long-term perspective. Okay, it was just patched together 30 years ago under, you know, when council was amalgamated, but Yarra Council for 20 years was something quite else, and now it seems to be turning into something quite reactionary.
Chris, you're right that there is a younger demographic in Yarra that often do not get heard or do not get seen when it comes to the politicking of the council. And in Collingwood, it's even younger. However, I would say that, like, looking at our group of, you know, the broad cross spectrum of our group, there are young people, there are old people, there are retired people, there are renters, there are owners. There's a really broad cross section of the population. So it's not, it's, I don't think it's quite fair to say it's young versus old necessarily.
No, I wasn't trying to do that, but it does seem the focus of the council group is away from the younger cohort.
I think that possibly traditionally they have sided with people who are older, who are owners, and who have more time to engage in those processes and, you know, what people might call NIMBYs. Though I think also this issue about Wellington Street is a funny kind of way to think about NIMBYism, because this is actually a project that would improve property values, you know, so it should usually be something that also unites NIMBYs. So I think it's more, I think the division is more people who can imagine a neighbourhood with fewer carts and those who can't imagine having restrictions on going anywhere they like in the car. The way that the modal filters were designed meant that local traffic could get around, but it might mean a couple more turns to get to where you need to go. So that is a restriction. It's not a completely insurmountable restriction. Of course, you know, as you and I would know, if you have to ride a bike, often you have to take a big detour to find the safest route, and we're used to that inconvenience. So it was a slight inconvenience for people who drive, but it wasn't insurmountable. But I think what it really pointed to was a bit of a lack of imagination. I mean, many other cities in the world, in response to the 1973 fuel crisis, pedestrianized a lot of streets. And many other cities in the world have these thriving, fully pedestrianized streets, you know, where delivery vehicles can get through, but the businesses are thriving, the neighborhoods are much calmer, much quieter, and easier to get around. But we don't really have that in Australia. I think we need more density to make that a reality. But I think it's something that we more and more need to think about, not necessarily fully pedestrianized, but in order to have a street that is better and that can be better shared among all its users, as well as the people who live there, as well as the businesses there, we do need to reconceptualize how we design our streets.
In 2026, 3CR is celebrating 50 years on air. Help us celebrate 50 years. Subscribe.
Go to 3cr.org.au or call 03 9419 8377.
One thing I've been a bit frustrated about with the way that The Age has reported this story, so there's now been three articles in The Age, and they've all basically had the same angle. They've all been like, she said versus he said. None of them have really grappled with, let's have a discussion about urban design and what this means going forward as the population increases, or let's have a discussion about how we can use our cars less, especially as petrol becomes more expensive, and also because we need to drive down pollution from transport, which is the third biggest source of pollution in the country, or other angles to this story, you know. And I think there's a lot more to this story than just one street in one neighborhood and two community campaigns opposed to each other. There's a lot more that we can think about in terms of how we want to design our cities to be better.
A disappointment that people felt, that we felt that we were discussing an issue, not having this tribalism, which is not the case. I saw this at the council meeting when I was watching it, of, you know, the councils after they made their vote or divisive issue. And I thought, but you created this. Your behaviour created this.
And we've tried, of course, to be very positive in all our communications, all our public facing communications. We've never, you know, named and shamed or said anything mean. It's all, we've been deliberately as positive as possible. However, we are pointed in our polite but also firm in how we speak to councillors about what, you know, what we expect them to do. And I personally have been disappointed in their lack of action on a misinformation campaign. And I think this is something that council also needs to be more alert to, because as we've seen at the federal level, there's a federal parliamentary inquiry on this. Misinformation is a really problematic thing, and we need to, council needs to take firmer action against misinformation.
And you have confidence in local government because it is a level of government out of three in Australia, you know, federal, state and local. Local government's the one that the most people interact with almost on a daily basis. They should they should be more amenable, conducive to what residents are saying. Now, moving forward, what's in the future, Alex?
Anyone who's on the mailing list already, I encourage you to stay on in case when we have more to say, we'll let you know where our energy will be directed. In the immediate near term, there's going to be a critical mass bike ride. They're going to come up Wellington Street in solidarity with us, which is fantastic. So if you're able, meet at 5:30 at the State Library on the 29th of May. The full route will be revealed soon, but part of that will be up the north end of Wellington Street. And after that, we'll go to the pub together, so that'll be nice. And following that, also our core group, and I've invited people who are on the mailing list, read your emails if you haven't already, to join us for a pub meet where we could all get together, lock heads together, and think about ideas to funnel this energy into the next project. There's also, on the Wellington Street project specifically, there will be some more community consultations around those turn restrictions. So for people who are really keen to continue to be engaged, we need to still push for seeing what we can do to get through traffic off the street. That's the next immediate thing for Wellington Street. But there are some other bigger projects and ideas sort of bubbling away, and we'll keep the group informed, the followers informed, as we sort of figure them out. I mean, the other thing to remember is that we're all working full time. Many of us have kids. It's been a lot of work doing this campaign on the side, but it's also been very energising. So we hope to continue to keep doing things together.
Yeah, so go to nicerwellingtonstreet.org, Instagram as well, which is pretty much the same, Nicer Wellington Street.
Thanks very much, Chris, for having me on the show and for your support.
And thank you to Alex for making time for a catch-up on Welly Street, which is... It's going to keep going because it's the inner city. Things are constantly evolving, adapting and changing. And it's mentioned in the interview, it's more of ongoing discussion rather than a debate. This is the stuff that I find very, very, it's as many people have said in the last week or so, what was the point of this when people seemed to have a predetermined opinion which had nothing to do with what was actually out for public consultation? There is, as I said, it's quite irregular. Now, on to something more positive. Going back to our previous guest that Val and Faith had on the show, Robbie Danger. The Guinness Book record has been approved. So Robbie Webb has put up a post saying from the Guinness Book thing who collate all this stuff, that they are the first openly transgender person to circumnavigate the globe by bicycle, and they're now a world record holder. Fantastic. Now, I suppose there's a lot of people today, saying it's Monday, happily recovering from the gravel Macedon. It was a bit of a, it was a very wet, woolly and gritty ride out there, and I hope you all had fun and you're probably over the next few days either washing down or dismantling your bike or getting things off the drivetrain, because that's what... wet weather does to your drivetrain. And I'm just repeating myself because I can remember what it was like to do MTB stuff, and it's like, oh, do I have to strip that down? But you're doing it joyfully. I hope you're doing it joyfully. Okay, and what else have I got in news and advances? There's probably a whole heap of things, but again, you probably noticed that it's getting towards 10:30 and I'm still here. Yeah, that, you know what that means? It means I'm doing an hour-long program. And so I'm doing a catch-up. So I said this was almost like a mirror of a show in February, but it's a couple of months long. This is what we do on this show because 3CR provides that platform where you can hear things that you won't hear anywhere else in mainstream media, and also our increasingly atomized kind of digital landscape. Well, it's absolutely atomized. Now, I just remembered there was two very, very good reels that The Age have put out. The first one was to do with Alphington Link and the incredible long journey that took and that was with Clay Lucas. Now, Clay more or less said that this is one of the first stories, if not the first story, he started on when he was a new journalist, when he was a baby journalist. And now, in the early aughties, and talking to James Thyler, who had started it actually a fair bit earlier in the late 80s, to get that connection to the main Yarra Trail around Alphington and a whole bunch of related projects. Now, there's a really good reel out about that. We've linked it off the Yarrabug website to do with Alphington Link, or you can go to Instagram and look it up. And there was another interesting reel to do with rideouts. Now, you probably heard of these. If you haven't, therefore, people much younger than I am, it's young people getting out there and having a hoon around, quite literally, on e-bikes and e-motorbikes and a whole bunch of other things, and, you know, the opposing or for and against. Now, I have no moral view on it. It's like, well, what are people supposed to do these days when, if you've got the social media bans, you have an increasingly hostile environment where young people are not supposed to be doing certain things, or increasing pressures. And you get this thing of, as we were just saying in the, it's on the next interview, of why don't they go outside? Well, what's the point when you've made such a hostile, adversarial environment for people to just socialise? Anyway, so there's a pretty good, I think it's, you know, it's open-ended. You can take your own viewpoint on rideouts. There's been a slew of Instagram accounts I've noticed over the years to do with rideouts. You know, is it people of a certain age group getting out and having fun, or is it hoonish behaviour or whatever? I don't have any moral standpoint on it. Go and have a look at the reel, find out a bit more about rideouts. It's kind of like critical mass is slightly more chaotic, younger offspring, I think, even though there's probably really no linkages between the two, but it just feels a bit that way. So anyway, up next, I have an interview with Aidan. Bicycle Users Group Radio on 3CR. I'm a catch-up interview with Aidan, and we're talking about safer streets, 30k per hour, and issues in Richmond. Aidan, what's happened since we last spoke?
Hey Chris, thank you for having me on the show. So it's been an interesting and exciting couple of months for us and the campaign since we last caught up. So for your listeners, as a reminder, our campaign calls for safer 30 km per hour streets to be adopted on all the council controlled streets within Richmond. We set up this campaign in October last year in response to a couple of things. So firstly, the success of the Fitzroy and Collingwood 30 km per hour trial and a desire to apply that into Richmond. And then also the change in the state government's speed zoning policy back in August, which made it legal for Victorian councils to apply to the Department of Transport and Planning to change speed limits down to 30 km per hour permanently, not just in temporary trials that they needed permission for. And then beyond that, why did we choose 30 as our campaign? So we wanted to figure out what was a simple, clear next step to make our local streets safer, and lower speed limits were that answer. They're cheap to implement, quick to implement, and relatively politically easy compared to new infrastructure being added.
The thing with 30k in our streets, especially our inner streets, it's actually, they were never designed to go over a certain speed anyway, with how houses and streets are around older and narrower infrastructure. So it's a no-brainer in terms of it being codified, for want of a better expression. What would 30k do to a street in terms of, you know, can kids play kick-to-kick and footy and that sort of thing, or is it something a lot broader?
Yeah, there's a few aspects that are really beneficial to the neighbourhood and to the community. I think something that you hear a lot of from older people are things like, oh, kids used to be able to play in the street, it used to be safe. Wouldn't that be so nice? And things like safer 30K streets can be enablers of those activities for children. But there are benefits beyond that too. So things that we point to are quieter streets. So vehicle tire noise is less at lower speeds when people drive. So having simple things like conversations between your neighbors when you go for a walk is more pleasant and easy to do. On top of that, the vulnerabilities for people walking, people cycling, and kids getting around is much lower, with greater reaction time for drivers and shorter braking distances required when people have to stop in emergencies. Other things like greater uptake of cycling and walking, which can be expected, creates healthier, happier people, and it means less trips for drivers, so there's less congestion. Lastly, it's really important that it just signals to the community what is possible. So it's meant to be a simple, small change, but it can have a big impact and can highlight what is possible in our communities to make them more livable and safer.
And that's off the back of, like, here in Melbourne, Yarra was a prime mover on this. I remember interviewing on this program quite a while back, the Love 30 campaign, and things to do around Fitzroy and the like, and how people realised that this was the way to go in making their streets just more livable and safer, and just felt like this is home. You don't feel like a stranger on your own street with people barreling down at inappropriate speeds.
100%. Yeah. And I think, again, that's one of the main points that we took inspiration from, really. So we know in Fitzroy and Collingwood, where they've set up the trial 30K zone, that there's been a 62% reduction in serious injuries involving pedestrians and cyclists in that area. And the streets didn't change. The people who used the streets didn't change. The only thing that changed was the speed limit. And it had such a material difference. So for everyone who travels through those streets, so you don't even have to be a Richmond resident, for example, and you can still benefit from these improvements. And as you say, Yarra used to be a leader in these sorts of things in the last couple of years, the previous council term, and even before that. And so we would like to see a return to that sort of form with the current councillor cohort and in years to come as well.
Because that Yarra Loves 30 campaign, that started off in 2018, and that was basically in North Fitzroy and Collingwood. Trial was further expanded in 2024. And I think we spoke about this in our previous interview about the Victorian government has updated that zoning policy, speed zoning policy. I think we've discussed this, but so it enables councils to do 30k per hour. And I believe that, just off the top of my head, that Derebin are doing this for their High Street Preston revitalisation.
So it's not just in Yarra, as you mentioned. So Derebin have done some good work on potentially lowering their speed limits on the High Street up there, but even beyond Victoria. So in New South Wales, they've had the discussion in state parliament where the Greens put forward the idea of lowering the default residential speed limit from 50 down to 30. And unfortunately, it didn't pass, but it brought up a great discussion points and made the debate really public and visible and highlighted the benefits to people who otherwise wouldn't have seen it. And so I think this is only going to happen more and more, and we would certainly love to see even more discussion of it in Richmond and in Yarra.
TransFamily is a not-for-profit organization providing a peer support group for loved ones, including parents, siblings, extended family, and friends of a trans and gender diverse person. TransFamily runs discussion groups in person and online. We offer a safe space to share your experiences, ask any questions regarding your situation, and provide peer support. We are especially keen to hear from loved ones in regional and rural Victoria. Donations to TransFamily are tax deductible. For more information, visit transfamily.org.au or look for us on Facebook. TransFamily is a 3CR supporter.
Bring up that in Europe, Rome is following in with a new 30k per hour speed limit, which is kind of interesting if anyone's been to Rome and seen their traffic. I think it'd be on local streets. But there's a whole bunch of things where it doesn't actually affect travel times.
Yeah, exactly. We know that in Melbourne and certainly elsewhere around the world too, that an RMIT study from October last year showed that if all residential speed limits in the city were reduced from 50 to 30, there was a doubling in the number of cycling volumes as it became more approachable as a way to get around. But for drivers, as you mentioned, there was only an average increase of 1 minute in the typical journey length, because a lot of our time is stuck at traffic lights or in traffic or on high speed roads anyway, like highways. So it doesn't make an appreciable difference to drivers, apart from being safer, which is obviously very important. And overseas, we've seen really good benefits from this as well. Places like London, Paris, where they've expanded their zones for 20 miles per hour, which is equivalent to 30 or 30 kilometers per hour too.
Just looking at some stuff here too for Bologna, Amsterdam, London, Helsinki, Bilbao, a whole bunch of things that were, this is from 2024 onwards, the European Commission announced that there'd be a partnership of 40 European cities to prioritise road safety through like a lower urban speed limits. This is basically, it's how large cities are moving towards, is people have got to live in cities, they've got to find, so it's safe and enjoyable. And this, as you've said, is an economical and beneficial way of keeping our streets safer and more livable.
100%. It's absolutely the way to go. It makes things safer for everyone, makes things easier to maintain, less congestion, all of these benefits that we can expect and have seen in many of those European cities that you mentioned. We could expect to come to Melbourne. You know, we think we're different here, but that's what every city and every neighbourhood thinks. But really, when it comes to these important issues, things are quite similar and we can really see the improvements just like everywhere else has as well.
I think you've got to repeat, or either one of us repeats, what happens at different speeds in terms of stopping. Have you got that at hand in front of you?
Yes. So it's important that we mention the changes in what's possible and why it matters really going down to 30 and why not 40 Ks or why not 50 Ks. And because it's a non-linear relationship when it comes to the impact if you are unfortunately hit by a vehicle as a pedestrian. So at 50 Ks, for example, there's anywhere from an 80 to 90% chance of being severely injured or a fatality. Whereas if it's at 30 Ks, it's a much lower percentage chance of a fatality and much higher chance of survival. And so this is a really important point that we can bring home to recognize that, you know, 50 is not really good enough. And even 40, there is improvement there, but it's still not quite the best practice. And we should be going for best practice.
There's been some high profile incidences around Melbourne and Victoria, you know, with people being injured or killed by out of control vehicles. This brings into thing what we were just discussing with 30K and road design. And it's something that, you know, I'm looking at stuff here for Transport Vic. You know, they talk about safer speeds and the rest of it. But we're talking about where pedestrians have priority over vehicles along the road. Could you give us some instances of stuff recently that you've looked at?
Yeah, so I think I've actually heard some unfortunate incidences of people, you know, being hit by vehicles, even at lower speeds here in Richmond. I know there's been a few incidents in the queue, as you mentioned, but the one in Richmond, I was speaking to a lady at the Gleadle Street Market talking about the 30K per hour petition, and she highlighted that unfortunately a child was hit by a vehicle as it rounded the corner on his way to school. Yeah, he had quite a severe injury involving his tongue. So it's very, very tragic stuff. And I think those kind of incidences, plus all the must be hundreds of them that go unaccounted and unreported, are equally important because they're just as traumatic for people involved, but they don't necessarily get reported and we don't know about them. So those sorts of stories are really eye-opening and a good reminder of why we need these sort of advocacy campaigns to support safer streets and roads in Yarra and in Richmond.
Like so many community organisations, we need your continued financial support to keep 3CR on air and our community connected and strong.
Consider selecting Auto Renew for your subscription so your subscription keeps rolling on every year.
We love the security of knowing we have your support into the future.
Head to 3cr.org.au or call 9419 8377 and remember to select recurring for your annual subscription.
I there was a change, or proposed change, to the speed limit on Victoria Street here in Richmond between Church Street and Burnley Street, where it's currently 60 kilometres per hour, which is way too fast for a retail strip with housing around it. And it was proposed to be reduced to 40 k's, which is a good first step. Now, this was announced on Transport Victoria's socials back in late February of this year. And I'd followed up and had a look at the street just about a month ago, and the speed limits were still 60, which didn't make any sense to me. So I reached out to Transport Victoria to ask what's going on here. And they've let me know that, oh, yes, it was meant to be changed, thanks to, I should mention, advocacy from the previous councillor term at Yarra. So that was meant to be changed, but it hasn't yet. So I have now got an update that as of the end of May, they're expecting the electronic signage boards on that portion of Victoria Street should be changed to 40 k's, but we'll certainly be keeping an eye on that and holding Transport Victoria to account.
Okay, I read this last time, but I think, do you think I should read it again?
You can. I think it's pretty interesting, especially if it's relevant to Richmond.
Okay, this is to do with Richmond post-World War II, the years immediately after, and Janet McCallum, award-winning classic, Struggle Town, Public and Private Life of Richmond, 1900 to 1965. Now, there's a quote in it. I did this in February, and I'm going to do it again. In April 1948, 18 people were killed on Richmond's roads. In April 1949, no fewer than 30 died, 9 of them in Punt Road, another 9 in Bridge Road, 3 in Swan Street, and 9 elsewhere in Richmond. I've read this a couple of times on the show. It still just stuns me of what previous eras had to contend with. And would, you know, today's more affluent Richmond understand that? Or, you know, it shows how residents' lives have really benefited from consistent improvements to road safety design and lower speeds.
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly something that we need to recognise and thank people for the changes that they've made in the past, because those are just unacceptable figures. And I think we shouldn't even today accept the road deaths and injuries and trauma that we see in Richmond and beyond. There was someone who was tragically killed crossing the street on the corner of Church Street and Bridge Road a year or two ago. That kind of thing is just unacceptable. It was a truck crossing the road as the man was trying to get to a tram. So these sorts of things still do happen. Fortunately, not in the same numbers as what happened back then, the numbers you referenced, Chris, but still one death is too many. One injury is too many. And so we need to make sure that we're pushing the City of Yarra Council and the state government to continue to improve safety on our streets and on our roads for vulnerable road users and for drivers.
So what's the update with the petition? You've got some news here.
We've got over 250 signatures now, so it's been a slow build-up online and via sharing it and a hard copy at Gledhill Street Market. And excitingly, we've tabled the petition at last Tuesday's City of Yarra Council meeting, thanks to Councillor Harrison putting that forward. And we're now keen to hear the formal response from council officers, which is the next step now that we've tabled it. So really keen to understand and get engagement from them to see and show that there is community support for safer 30 kilometre per hour streets. And hopefully it'll get them thinking about proposing this idea to councillors.
And how can people find out more and get in with Safe Streets for Richmond and the petition?
Yeah, certainly. So a couple of steps for your listeners. Please sign our petition and leave a comment as to why you would love 30 kilometres per hour for Richmond. You can find our petition at change.org/30forRichmond. That's 30FOR Richmond. You can also follow us on Instagram, Safer Streets for Richmond, and tag us in your photos of Richmond. Lastly, on the petition, and then one other point for you, we would love for you to contact your local ward councillor and let them know that you want safer streets for Richmond, just like residents in Fitzroy and Collingwood have been enjoying for 2 years now with their 30 kilometre per hour trial. We deserve the same thing here. And lastly, I'll just tease that we've got a potential new Richmond state election campaign coming for Safer Streets for Richmond in the weeks and months ahead. So keep an eye out on our socials and we'll let you know what that's about.
And thank you to Aidan for making time for having a chat about how special, or I should say important, vital, and a whole bunch of other really positive words
of how good 30k per hour is in local streets. I think that's a campaign that's really going to kick on in terms of broader focus across our communities, across Melbourne and Victoria. Okay, that's all I've got time for today. It's coming up for Radiothon, so, put a little plan together of how much you want to give us, or the entire station if you so feel like it. So keep an eye out for our Give Now page that should be up shortly. And, 3CR, as you know, gets really no government support. We supply depend upon you, our dear listeners, for subscriptions and donations. So go to 3cr.org.au and look for the either subscribe or donate options, or have a look at upcoming fundraisers. Okay, so I've got a little bit of time to fill in, so I'm going to play a few tunes after this announcement.
Do you care about older people's housing? Are you keen to talk to politicians and your community about why housing for older people is important?
Then become a housing champion with Housing for the Age Action Group. The Housing Champions program will train older people to talk about housing leading up to the Victorian election in November this year. For more information and to register your interest, go to Housing for the Age Action Group's website, oldertenants.org.au, or call us on 03 9654 7389.
A 3CR supporter.
Suspend judgment and unleash your natural curiosity about the workings of the mind, approaching your experience with warmth and kindness to yourself and others.
Relax yourself. Be in the moment. Let it go. Feel your breath. Be yourself.
Yarrabug would like to thank Bicycle Network for their financial support. Bicycle Network, a not-for-profit with 45,000 members, working to get more people riding for their health and well-being. Bicycle Network is proud to sponsor the Yarrabug program and support its important advocacy for safer and more accessible riding. By becoming a Bicycle Network member and or participating in one of their iconic riding events, you're supporting Bicycle Network's Ride to School programs and advocacy campaigns to make it easier for everyone to ride a bike every day. Visit bicyclenetwork.com.au for more information.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.